It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 3 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 9th of April, 2025. How are you all getting on? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you back with us again. It's essential, actually, because otherwise I'd just be sitting here talking to myself. But we are not at that, are we? We've got 3 hours coming up of all the usual mix of stuff that you'd expect. We'll be across all the major issues and stories affecting Donegal and beyond, and little chats here and there, and all your comments. And I want your comments in too, by the way. 086 6025000, WhatsApp and text the show. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to text for the first time. We appreciate everyone's points of view, and your views as important as the next person. So get it out there, shared. 086 6025000. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. And good morning to Kathy and Dolores, the among the hundreds already joining to watch the show live across the various platforms and on our website as well. If you're at home, you can watch on your big TV, your smart TV and Fire Stick on the YouTube app. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland and you'll see we're live. And we're on your Facebook and X profiles as well. We'll start with the local paper out today, and a positive story from the Finn Valley Voice. A Castlefin native who survived a bone marrow transplant following an MDS diagnosis, a form of blood cancer, in spring 2023, has raised €4,000 at a recent coffee morning at the White House Garden CPI Centre Castlefin for the Daffodil Centre in Letterkenny. What an amazing total to raise from a coffee day, to raise anyway, actually, for that matter. Bernie McGee says that the staff at the centre were a huge support to her, and that she did not know about the service at the beginning of her cancer journey. And what a great thing she's achieved there. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: the surgeon at the centre of the Temple Street spinal surgery scandal lied about the corrosive material of unapproved springs he wrongfully implanted into three children, a new report has found. And it is a damning report. The review into the controversy has exposed a series of failures in Children's Health Ireland governance and reporting mechanisms which led to the surgeries taking place. Dr. Jim Brown, the chair of CHI, the body overseeing children's hospitals across the country, stepped down just 1 hour after the review was published yesterday, as he apologised to the families affected. And the surgeon in question was quite routinely named in previous press coverage, but not so much now. Taoiseach Micheál Martin said the idea that you would use springs outside of the entire protection framework is beyond belief, as he put the blame squarely on the clinician referred to as Surgeon A in the report. The 171-page document has found that Surgeon A bypassed protocol while ordering the springs and failed to conduct adequate safety examinations before installing the untested devices in children. And I do believe there is a Donegal family that is affected by this. My understanding is at this time they're choosing not to speak out publicly. But as I say, when we're reading this, I'm conscious that there are people potentially listening to this programme that are directly affected by this scandal. Surgeon A stopped performing surgeries in 2023 and has been referred to the Irish Medical Council for investigation. My understanding too is that people speak quite highly of him and the stuff that he was doing, bar this experimental inclusion of springs. Well, the report notes that Surgeon A originally told the Health Information and Quality Authority, which was tasked with conducting the review, that the springs were made at medical grade stainless steel, a material sometimes used for surgical implants. HICWA subsequently found the springs ordered were made of a material called non-alloyed spring steel, which is not used for surgical implantation. So, I mean, it's a horrendous story, isn't it? And it's interesting for once maybe to see some accountability, some resignations taking place. The Irish Independent this morning: Taoiseach Simon Harris meets US Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick for the first time today, as 20% tariffs against EU goods come into effect. While addressing those crippling impositions, Mr. Harris is expected to explain that Ireland is not a tax haven operating a scam. And these tariffs are huge. They're going to have a huge impact, certainly on the spending power of Americans, but also on the income from countries around the world. Thinking on China, 104% import taxes, effectively, Donald Trump has imposed there. So if you're an American and you buy something from China, you are facing an additional 104% on its cost. And it is the person buying, just to be clear, that is paying that. And we were speaking to Ian from Lottie Dolls there, and he was talking of their business model, which is similar to many, an Irish company that has a manufacturing base in China, and then the products are directly transported from China to the likes of the United States. And that's just one local company owned by Ian Harkin there, that now his product, although he has a lot of product in the United States already, he said, and maybe hopefully that allows companies time for common sense to prevail, but it means that any new products going, if they're on a container ship on the way to the United States at the moment, the consumer's paying double the price. You know that's going to affect sales at any company. Well, the polite pushback from Simon Harris will come after Mr. Lutnick used such terms in highlighting Ireland as a country with a huge trade imbalance with the United States. He also pointed to the huge colony of US pharma companies in Ireland, making Mr. Harris's special mission to Washington, D.C. even more sensitive. Well, that story was written before the inevitable happened. You might remember when the tariffs were first announced by Donald Trump, people were saying, whoopee, pharmaceuticals aren't included. And I pointed out that there was provision in the document released, and I said it a couple of times, and I didn't want to be the bearer of bad news. But I said on a number of occasions that Donald Trump had left provision in his policy to introduce specific tariffs for specific areas of trade. And unfortunately, the chickens are coming home to roost. This will impact our tax take at the very least. US President Donald Trump has said that he will soon put tariffs on pharmaceuticals as he ramps up the worrying trade war. Punishing tariffs on dozens of economies come into force this morning, including, as I mentioned, over 100% in levies against Chinese goods. Late last night, Trump said, "We're going to tariff our pharmaceuticals. We're going to be announcing very shortly a major tariff on pharmaceuticals. When they hear that, they will leave China. They will leave other places because most of their product is sold here." He's concerned about the ability of the United States in a major event to generate medicine for its own people, and also obviously the tax take as well. He stated that in his Rose Garden speech. This is now whereby I think almost you're at the point this is going to hit Ireland potentially so hard that if you support Trump and what he's doing, it's almost anti-Irish, to be honest with you, because we're all going to feel this in some form or other. Now, that's if everything plays out as he intends. Industry group, the Irish Pharmaceutical Healthcare Association, previously told The Journal, who I'm taking this story from, that it believes the real impact in the dispute between the White House and the EU will be seen 4 or 5 years from now. This is due mainly to the timescale for investment in the industry's large-scale manufacturing plants. So, you know, you can't up and move out of Ireland straight away. That being said, we don't know what impact the tariffs might have. I know a lot of you follow the Enoch Burke story, so there's an update in many of the papers today. I'll take this from the Irish Times. More than €40,000 has been seized from Enoch Burke's bank account on foot of High Court orders enforcing the payment of thousands of euro in fines owed by the school teacher, a court has heard. Mr. Justice David Nolan yesterday ordered Mr. Burke to pay legal costs incurred by Wilson's Hospital School and the Attorney General in the proceedings, though Mr. Burke continually spoke over the judge as he gave his ruling. Two of Mr. Burke's family members, his mother Martina and sister Amy, were removed from the courtroom by Gardaí during the hearing. Previously, following an application by the Attorney General, Mr. Justice Nolan made an order appointing a receiver to receive Mr. Burke's salary and a garnishing order over his bank account for up to €79,000, the amount that was owed by the teacher over his continued failures to abide by court orders prohibiting him from attending at Wilson's Hospital School in Multifarnham in County Westmeath. So there was a bit and back and forth. Obviously, Enoch Burke was protesting his innocence, and I think the judge referred to him as a petulant schoolboy or something along those lines. I've stopped watching the Grand National because I didn't enjoy it anymore. I don't know. I think it's an age thing. But I just stopped watching it because, you know, you see the horses and the jockeys falling and the horses being exhausted. And it just felt like watching it, I was complicit in it. I just don't need it in my life, if you know what I mean. I don't think any of us need it. I could be talking out of my hat there. But when you read stories like this, it sort of makes you think. A horse which collapsed in the Grand National has died, sparking anger from animal welfare campaigners. Celeb Delen, I think the horse's name is, pardon me if I've got that wrong, passed away 3 days after falling during the latter stages of Saturday's showpiece race at Aintree. The tragedy has reignited concerns about safety in racing. Jockey Michael Nolan was handed a 10-day suspension by stewards for his decision to continue to ride the horse when he had no more to give after jumping the penultimate fence. The 13-year-old gelding, trained by Philip Hobbs and Johnston White, stayed at Aintree overnight on Saturday before heading back to their stables for further treatment. Hobbs and White said in a statement, "We're heartbroken to share that Celebre Delen has passed away. He received the very best treatment in the veterinary teams and was improving, but the horse was quite old. And was clearly in distress. That's why the jockey has been suspended. And he's not the only horse, or they are not the only horse, to perish at the Grand National. We invest a great deal of money into it. And I do note as well that there's a really high-profile medical company with their logo on the side of this horse. And you do wonder, for how long would a company want to be associated with the images of a horse with its neck turned back or lying prostrate beneath a hedge? It does seem a strange bit of product placing, but anyway, have you any views about the Grand National horse racing in general? Do you support it? Do you think it's important? Obviously, we're talking about industries in this country. It is a big industry, but I mean, like, there's millions upon millions of euro of your money invested in, you know, horse racing and greyhound racing. 28 odd million it was some years. Not sure what it was this year. Is it sort of a thing of the past? I think punters aren't going in as great numbers anymore, but I think that's to do with the cost. But anyway, have you a view on it? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. 086 60 25,000. Maybe I'm talking woke nonsense. The government has slammed several religious orders after only two of the eight linked to mother and baby homes offered to contribute to a survivor redress scheme. The Sisters of Bon Secours offered 12.97 million, a sum deemed as meaningful and accepted by the government. The Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul has proposed contributing a building in the scheme. That offer is to be considered by government. A third religious body, the Sisters of St. John of Gods, declined to contribute to the scheme, but offered a conditional donation of €75,000 to be used for a charitable purpose associated with mother and baby home survivors. The remaining five bodies have made no offer. The details were contained in a report by Sheila Noonan, the independent negotiator appointed by the government to engage with the organisations over financial redress. So most of them not putting their hands in their pockets. And lastly, like a bit of boxing, I'm talking about banning horse racing. Many people might sort of talk about banning boxing. But anyway, Katie Taylor is, I think we're heading towards her last fight. She's owes the world of boxing nothing. I think she's single-handedly launched female boxing. I don't think that's any exaggeration. She single-handedly got women's boxing into the Olympics. That's indisputable. But I do remember the very first interview, actually, I was watching a boxing, and her and Eddie Hearn, she was turning over, as they say in boxing terms, and she talked of what she wanted to achieve and what she wanted to see in women's boxing. And between her and Eddie Hearn, they seem to have delivered much of it. And she is such hot property, and I suppose it's historic in that it might be the last time to see her. The most expensive tickets for Katie Taylor's trilogy bout with Amanda Serrano are being sold for $1 million. The Brave Boxer will take on the Puerto Rican for a third time on July 11th at Madison Square Garden in New York for the Undisputed Super Light Championship. Super lightweight. The kind of problem I have is with this trilogy is she's too light. Serrano's much lighter than Katie Taylor. And Katie Taylor is probably, you know, quite old as a boxer. I'm not really that interested because, as I say, Serrano has come up so many weights to make this trilogy happen. But anyway, that's the way it is. Okay, if you want to comment on anything we mentioned there in the papers, it's 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call too if you prefer on 07491 25000. Donegal County Council has been asked to meet with the families bereaved in the Chrysler tragedy after it emerged this week that the council made a submission to An Bord Pleanála supporting the development of the site. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine described it as a slap in the face to the families, suggesting that a building was being prioritised over grieving families. And we all know how sensitive a topic this is. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of the 100% Redress Party joins me now. I suppose, in fairness, Thomas, the council would have been asked to submit the reasoning for approving this planning application. And of course, they only could consider planning matters. I don't think there is a provision within sort of the planning system to take into consideration people's feelings or emotions. Would you agree with that, or do you think that's an unfair assessment?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, dear listeners. Greg, I understand with the council stance or councillor's procedures that they have to follow. But I think in a case against Greg, when 10 people lost their lives, there's a lot more sensitivity to it. And I do believe that the council would have to take in the grieving families and their stance and their feelings on this. You know what I mean? This is just not your normal planning application. You know, we have 10 grieving families there. And I think that the council would need to sat down. My point on the council yesterday was that we're always reading stuff on the media and social media before the families was actually getting any information on it. And I think that was totally wrong. And I think that's what's heartbreaking, you know, that the night, the day that the plan was made on the site, that the families waited the next day, but yet no, it was highlighted all over social media the evening before that this was granted. And I think that's what the slap in the face is, Greg. It is, you know, these families is grieving, and this is constantly being brought up. And I don't think, my personal opinion, Greg, that they need to find another site in Creature for a phone station. Let these families get on with their grieving and get on, not this constant being brought up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the problem is though, or the contention is, Thomas, that there isn't an alternative site. And you know, whilst we have to be incredibly sensitive to the bereaved families and everything that they've gone through, there is also others that are of the view that Creasa does need, you know, another facility in the heart of the town for its prosperity and its future and for everyone. And it's very difficult to see how all of those views can be met, if you know what I mean, given the sensitive nature of this particular site. But there's no other sites, Greg, we're told.
I totally understand that the Chrysler needs another phone station, it needs a shop, post office, and it needs the whole lot. Nobody's going to object anything to that at all. I think, Greg, the sensitivity and the nature of the site that it's going to go back up on, that's where the difficulty lies, you know, for these families. And as I say, I couldn't support it, you know, in a personal capacity as a councillor. I was elected to represent the people, hey, and I represent them at will. And I don't believe that, you know, and that's just me, and I know there's an ongoing appeal to get onto this. I don't believe, Greg, that the sensitivity, the grievance of these families has been taken into consideration on this. And I know legally they probably can't, Greg, and the council probably can't take feelings on that, but this is such a sensitive issue. And as I say, like, I'm a father of 5 children, Greg, and I was hit the thought of loss a child in such a situation as some of these families have, that people just go ahead and put another block building in the place of the feelings. You know, it's very hard, and I
do find myself putting myself in that position. And God forbid, if it were one of my children or anyone close to me, the idea that someone might be standing on their final resting place or where they lost their lives, pumping petrol, it'd be hard to fathom. And I suppose if you look at the plans, I'm not sure what consultation there was, if any, with families as it relates to how their memories would be marked. Obviously, that is contained within the plans. And also, too, there is a I mean, I can only go by the plans. A very small remembrance garden, which is just a small patch of grass with bike racks against it, effectively. That's hard to swallow for families, I would imagine, or at least some of them.
Yeah, you
try and look at it objectively, but I mean, you can't detach yourself from what it would feel like as if it were you when you look at some of this stuff.
No, it is, Greg. It's heartbreaking, to be quite honest. Like, they imagine what they're going through, you know. And my spoke yesterday in the council was basically with the council, and please bring these families and sit down and talk to them. And before any future stuff is out there, you know, we're all glad to meet you, Greg. We're all glad to, you know, the stuff that you're doing. But I mean, before anything that would be in the public domain again, that the families at least is notified before it's out there, you know, so it doesn't, they don't have to.
It's not also too, just in relation to that, it's not actually even, when in terms of the last decision, letters are issued to family members, but they also then have to make contact and inform other members of the family, sons and daughters, cousins and what have you, who have been affected by this. And when the information is leaked before those letters even arrive, it is very damaging, because there's trauma here, and trauma can sometimes be different to grief, and that is not always considered. One of the proposals you've made, the planning process is the planning process. And the planning process was followed, and maybe some people might be able to appeal certain elements of that. But the council, the council followed the planning process, and on board Planala will as well. So if everything is in order with the planning in terms of the planning process, then on board Planala presumably can't overturn that again because of people's feelings. And I don't mean that in any way harsh. So you're suggesting the council acquire this site via a compulsory purchase order, and then it can be determined what to do with it. Is that in the best interests of all of Chrysler, in your view? Because you say you are there to represent all of the people, Thomas.
Yeah. You see, Greg, I was putting a motion on a few months back about that, and then I couldn't put it in because there was an ongoing planning application, and it could jeopardise planning approval or reject it, whatever. So the motion was withdrawn. And my plan is, Greg, that the council take over that site. That would be my aim, and build the memorial ground, whatever, and find another site in Chrysler. Sure, there has to be another site in Chrysler.
Well, you see, we're told there isn't. We've told that in terms of a shop, post office, service station that would be in Chrysler, we are told that there aren't any other sites, that this is it. And there are other businesses in the area too. I'm not sure what their views are that would benefit too from a return of the heart of Chrysler. And I say, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, and I said right at the top, this is incredibly sensitive, but we have to tease this stuff through too as well, don't we, Thomas?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I definitely fully understand, Greg, where you're coming from, you know. But as I say, Greg, the way I was brought up with a very good woman, God rest her, my mother, who fostered dozens and dozens of children down through the years in our home. She's a kind-natured woman, and I think I sort of took a wee bit after. My feelings, Greg, people's feelings and people's grief would come before a building in my eyes. You know, there's always a feeling crease there where something else can be. That's the way I look at things, Greg, and I could be far wrong. But that's the way I feel, Greg. You know, and a lot of people feel that, listen, we're dealing with 10 grieving families here. And some of the families that I've been speaking to, Greg, it's heartbreaking for them.
No, of course it is. But Thomas, again, just because I'm trying to cover all views from people listening as well, being very conscious that there are some people very directly affected by this. But say, unfortunately, in this county, we see all too often fatal road traffic collisions, and we've seen collisions where there have been, multiple occupants of the vehicle killed, and it's actually horrible to think of it like this, but the road's closed for 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. The Gardaí and the forensics go in and do their bit. And then the road's reopened again. And within 2 days, there's cars, you know, driving along where people have very sadly lost their lives. Considering that is the case, I mean, theoretically, we'd almost have to avoid driving on those roads to avoid the insensitivities that we potentially could see increasingly, if that makes sense, Thomas. Again, I'm not even comfortable posing that scenario, but as I say, I believe we have to talk about everything.
I don't think the two of them would be, and some are, I know people lose their lives in the roads, Greg, and God love them, God love their families, but I don't think it's in the same scenario. This is a fixed building on a site, Greg, and we have to still take into consideration, Greg, there's still an ongoing investigation. This all hasn't come out yet, what happened, the investigation is still ongoing, you know, and we're going to go ahead and build a shop there an investigation is still ongoing. But as regarding the road traffic incidents, Greg, and explosion and tragedy in Creasland, I don't think they're compared, Greg, okay. To be honest, you know. Even
no, I respect that. No, I understand that.
But I see, Greg, that I know there's people and probably in Creasland would like this shop back open on the same side of this. Like, and I have to take their opinions consideration of the two. But, Greg, I have to put the opinions of the bereaved families on
100%, as we have many occasions on this show as well. Just a number of people pointing out that Oma was rebuilt following the tragedies there. Another pointing out that would you have been opposed to the rebuilding in Oma and then Enniskillen after the bombings? I mean, these aren't necessarily your views either. These are, I think, you're representing the views of at least some of the families. So. Yeah. That's what you'll do. Does it matter whether you believed Enniskillen or Oma should have been rebuilt in the vicinity of the bombings there?
Greg, you see, Enniskillen Oma was bombings, you know, another completely different scenario. This was a tragedy. I'm not even going to speculate what it was, because I don't know, Greg. I can only listen to what's out in the public domain, what happened there. But, like, Oma and Enniskillen, there's two areas I know nothing about, Greg, and their bombs and after and tragedies, and lots of people lost their lives. You know, it's a scenario that would be up for the Oma people to decide, and Enniskillen, Greg. I couldn't comment on because I'm not from up there, and I couldn't comment, but the feelings was the family. I could say that it's absolutely horrifying what happened, you know, but I can't, Greg, say, I can only speak for the people that have been speaking to me from Creasland, and it's Loveland and Letterkenny here on the tragedy in Creasland. And as I say, every tragedy, Greg, is horrifying. And I say that Oma and Enniskillen would have been the same.
Yeah. I just think sometimes things have happened very quickly. And I know from speaking to families, they have felt somewhat outside of the process. I think a lot of that doesn't help. You know what I mean, about the redevelopment of this site. I think if maybe, you're never going to get everyone to agree, but I think if people didn't feel that they were finding out the information through unofficial channels, or that they decisions were being made as to how to honour their loved ones, for an example,
I think it
could have been done maybe differently.
The council, I do believe, government, needed to be more in direct contact with these families when decisions wasn't made. It wasn't happening, Greg. It didn't happen. You know, they weren't consulted in all this planning and stuff like that. And I think, Greg, if things like that had happened, things may be different. You know what I mean? There's people, you need to be consulting on people, speaking to people, taking on this, what I'm saying, Greg. Their feelings, their grief wasn't taken into consideration with anything. Nobody was speaking to them. Nobody was telling them anything. When they were contacting the council, they were put on hold on the phone. They were told planning was away for the day. And then I raised a letter sent out, but it was on social media all that evening that this was approved and that. And it's hurtful, Greg. You know,
some of the comments were getting in, and it's not necessarily always reflected of the majority view. But what about the North and all the atrocities which you mentioned? There'd be a lot of empty sites if that was the stance they took. You've already responded to that. Another. It's ridiculous that Councillor Devine would back such a move. We rule the country on law and nothing else. It concerns me that Councillor Devine has made this proposal. And another, I disagree with Councillor Devine. As a local resident of Creasla, yes, I understand the pain, but the need for the local amenity is more important at this time to the village. So there are varying views out there on this and on your stance on this as well.
Yeah, no, Greg, that's everybody's entitled to. That's why we live in a good democratic society. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, Greg, and I have entitled to mine and my own feelings. And as I say, I would dread to see if it was one of my own children, Greg, you know, and I have to understand how these families feel. And that's
All right. Can the Chrysler shop and post office not go back to its original site on the main street where it was years ago? But obviously nowadays part of the business model is fuel, and people need to be able to access fuel for their farm machineries, cars, vans, etc. Okay. I suppose, do you know if there's been any advance on the calls for Ombud Pleanála to host an oral hearing on this, where families would be able to, I suppose, speak directly to the ABP about their decision?
I haven't heard, Greg, yet, but I've been making inquiries about it here now today. I say that was late on yesterday evening when this was talked about in principle, and I'm actually listening to Bob O'Fee here, the Fuzzy, John Day Fuzzy, right, Greg, okay. So as soon as they come out, I will be making inquiries about that.
All right, continued look with the recovery. Thanks very much, Councillor Thomas Sean Devine. Again, you know, there's some subjects I'm not so comfortable talking about because I feel like I'm talking about how, you know, people who've been bereaved should feel. But it is a major story. It is one that is obviously going to be picked up nationally, potentially. And it's important we talk about it as well as sensitively as possible. Good morning, Greg. I would really appreciate if some of the councillors could go have a drive along the road from the barracks in Carrigart to Mickey Joe's shop and see if they think that road is in an acceptable condition. It's a disgrace to expect motorists to travel in that condition. There were pipes laid on that stretch of road and a drain left. It's going to cause a collision with people crossing the road to try and avoid it, as well as wrecking our cars. Are we paying a tax? We expect to have a road to travel on. Mind you, Claggan's not much better. The same thing happened 3 years ago, or there years ago, with pipe laying. I'm asking, please, councillors, have a look. Answer me. Is this an acceptable condition to leave a main road in a main tourist area? Thank you for highlighting it. I drive this road from time to time. It sunk really quickly. I have a feeling the council might be working on that really quite soon. They'd need to do something about it because, that, as you mentioned, for all the reasons you've outlined, and there are roads like this, I'm sure, all around the county. But I wouldn't be surprised if the council were working on that really soon. Perhaps they should. Right, I'm going to take a very quick break and then Paddy's going to join me. Just stay there for 2 minutes, Paddy. Now, sorry for holding you, Paddy. Yours is... I read the original text you sent in, Paddy, and I was taken aback by it. I'll just let you explain to the listeners.
Yeah. We had four daughters involved in the Chrysler explosion. Three of them was actually trapped in the shop and on the forecourt. Another girl, then she witnessed her sisters being buried in the explosion. And it's just that we've been left high and dry now. Like, we've had no consultation with anybody. We had heard nothing about any inquiry. We all found out through social media of everything that's going on. Like, we have nobody to liaison with us. We've just been left high and dry. Good luck to you now, just at this stage.
How could there be a thorough investigation or an inquiry if three people who were in the shop have not been spoken to, or the fourth person who witnessed it. Is it to do with their ages, Paddy? I can't understand how this could be classed as thorough, or if these people haven't been spoken to.
They have been spoken to. They were interviewed in Letterkenny.
Right.
But they haven't, you know, we haven't, it's an investigation. Like, we have heard nothing back about the investigation.
I get you. Right, so you're not being liaised with about the investigation.
No, we're not being liaised. Like, it's just like, we were injured. Like, where you go? Like, that's what how the girls feel at the minute. They haven't, they've been in the shop. We live quite close to the shop. Nobody came to us to say they're building a shop. They know my girls. My girls are in that shop every day. Like, but nobody's come to us, to my door, to say, oh, how would you feel, you know, you said four injured in this, how would you feel if we built the shop? We've heard nothing there. You know, it's more or less the maddening about it. Like, you know, we are locals, like, you could have came and asked us about the shop, but nobody came in here, you know.
Right, okay. So just to be clear, Paddy, because I don't want to misrepresent, they have been spoken to as part of the investigation, but they haven't had any contact in relation to the ongoing investigation,
no.
And there has been zero consultation as it relates to plans for this site. And you know, what a traumatic experience for them to have been in the building. You would imagine they'd be they'd have been a priority to be kept abreast of everything that's happening?
Nothing. But no, it's just, we have, you know, any of the meetings or anything that we went to, it was through Donna and Hugh that invited us to these meetings, but we haven't heard anything else from anybody or nothing like. But it's just, it seems unfair for the years at this stage, like. Their point of view is not taken into this. Their feelings haven't been taken into the consideration for the new shops are being built or anything like that. Like,
were they able to get counselling or what have you through the Red Cross services or what have you? Have they been supported in that regard?
To ourselves, we've got all that sort of stuff. But I'm like, they still got going to counselling and stuff.
So you had to, you as a family had to fund that yourselves?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's remarkable. Four of them were directly impacted by this. Yeah. Three of them in the shop.
It's a battle, like, a constant battle. If you bang a door in the house and they're jumping, or you know, bang a bit of the car, or you bang something outside and they're jumping, like, it's just, there's no one. It's just.
Are they able to talk about what it felt like to be in the shop at the time? Do they? It must be very difficult to sleep. But as you say,
it's difficult to sleep. It is, and it's hard for dad because you can't help them.
No, you want to take it from them, but you can't. Can you? You can just support them.
No.
And like, what are these teenagers, Paddy?
My oldest now is 17, and the next one then she would be 15.
Right, so they're
14.
They're mature girls, so. They must be saying, well, why am I seeing this on Facebook, or why am I seeing this on the news? Why are they not telling us how things are going?
You know, a wee bit of compassionate, you know, reach out. We're not hard to find, like, reach out and find us, like, you know, instead of letting everything go to social media and the papers having it first, like.
Yeah. Paddy, you say, you know, you're a local directly affected by this and your girl's directly affected by this as well. What are your views on plans for the redevelopment of this site? Can you see any argument for it in any form at all?
Well, for it to go ahead now is a real kick in the face.
Mm.
You know, that's, like, I have no problem with a shopping priest, you know, but not on the site. The site's too painful. Like, you know, my girls walk past that to get the bus in the morning. They walk past it from home from school. They walk to past the shop, the site now, to go meet friends and stuff. Like, it has the emotional effect on them. Like, you know, and even for our family, for us to go down past it every day and stuff, it's just, it's cold. Like, it's cold.
And of course, you don't know yet what caused this. Is anyone responsible? Was it an accident? You're not being given this information, so you're presumably having to. You mentioned the Harpers there. I take it then you're having to find out information about this investigation secondhand.
Yeah, we are.
I would have thought, even if the girls are teenagers, they're not adults yet, that someone like yourself, Paddy, would be nominated to be given this information, as all families are given this information, to pass it on to them?
No, nothing. We've heard nothing. It's just whatever we pick up on social media, or we're in contact with Don and Hugh and them, that's the only second-hand information we're getting.
All right, okay.
You know, my point of view is, like, how can Donegal County Council go on with this, give permission, when there's still an investigation going on in the site, like? You know, that my point of view is that should be shelved until investigation, everything's done next.
What do you think, Paddy, from, you know, talking to the people in the community that you're a part of, do you think there is a difference of opinion as to whether this site should be redeveloped, or do you think most people are for it or most people are against it? We know how you feel, but, you know, you're out and about as getting on with your lives as best as you can. What do you think Creasler feels about this?
I think it's quite a touchy subject at the minute with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of two sides to the story, and, you know, it is a difficult one to call. Like.
Yeah. Because you will have people that will have the utmost of sympathy for how it's impacted your family and the deceased, but they will also say, well, we need these facilities or life must move on, or you're saying that the sort of those different views are coexisting at the moment. It's probably a conversation people don't want to have.
No, but nobody wants to speak about it. Like,
yeah,
it's still quite a touchy subject. Like, you know, at the same time.
All right. Okay, Paddy, how are they getting on for the most part? I mean, obviously, as you say, they're hypersensitive to noises and bangs, and God knows what they experienced and the noise of metal and stone and screams. It must have just been horrendous for them. But are you happy with the way they seem to be coping with it, generally speaking?
Aye, they're dealing with it as best they can, I suppose, at the minute.
All right, okay.
But it's like, just later on in life, how is it going to affect them later on? Maybe 10, 15 years down the line, whatever. Like,
that's it. I'm surprised too that you have to fund the supports themselves, considering the massive amount of money that the public donated to this. I think they would have done it with the view that four people directly affected by this would have received counselling out of that. I hope that's not controversial, but I think most people who donated, I know when I donated, I would have expected you not to have to pay for counselling for this. But anyway, all right, Paddy, thanks for your insight into it. I do appreciate it, and incredibly conscious of how sensitive it is. I'm sorry to repeat myself, but a caller says, I live in Creasler, and everyone I've spoken to, including my own opinion, they want to shop back in our village. I think the majority of locals are of the same opinion, but are afraid to voice this in case of offending those who lost loved ones. And there's Paddy, who's been directly affected by it through injury to his daughters. He recognises as well that it's a tough, tricky subject. I wonder how many individual families object to the Creasler development. Sometimes it's just a few who are of one opinion or other. Someone should canvass all affected families and get their individual opinion out of the glare of the media. Caroline, the legal representatives, could you just check over that in terms of the law firm that's representing, representing a number of families and other individuals, and just get a sense if they have a official position through the law firm as it relates to this, just to be, I want to make sure that we're covering as many views as is possible, of course, especially and particularly and essentially by those that are directly affected. As you would have heard us mention in the papers, and it's everywhere, of course, the surgeon at the centre of the Temple Street spinal surgery scandal lied about the corrosive materials of unapproved springs he wrongfully implanted into three children, and those are sort of quotes from the report that was published today. Amanda Coughlin is part of a parent-led voluntary group advocating for children living with spina bifida and or hydrocephalus in Ireland. Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. What's your reaction to this report?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I think the whole nation's thoughts are with the families directly affected. And while I think the narrative that is spun by CHI at the moment is this will never happen again, it was three children. It was three children. It was three vulnerable children. And there should have been safety procedures, mechanisms, procedures in procurement that it never should have gotten to this. This should never have happened again. And telling us that it will never happen in the future is simply not good enough.
So how do we avoid it? You know what I mean? If that's not good enough, what would be good enough? What would your group, and I understand one of the children affected by this is a member of the group, what do you believe needs to be done now to reassure people that it wouldn't happen again?
Well, I suppose to the Department of Health, the Minister for Health and the HSE, I think they need to investigate whether they can have the confidence in CHI moving forward to the new Children's Hospital and whether CHI should be allowed to continue in the entity that it is. I think there is a scope for investigation whether CHI, which is run by an independent group, should now be amalgamated back into the HSE.
This is a trust issue too, isn't it, going forward? Because, you know, assurance in and of itself is not enough. If this could happen, if someone could go on a solo run like this and it not be picked up, how can we be assured it wouldn't happen again? So, because we trust, don't we? As I say, it's a trust issue. We hand our children or our loved ones over to these teams and, you know, most of the time they do the best they can. But, you know, we need something else to reassure us and to build that trust again, I think.
Well, the advocacy group that we've been running has been running for 10 years. So we've been highlighting for 10 years the issues in relation to CHI. You'll see that the chair of the board of CHI stepped down yesterday. I met with the chair of the board in 2018 and highlighted grave concerns then. So they can't say that they weren't concerned, that we had concerns about a number of issues in CHI. We met with HICWA when the investigation was starting. We asked for HICWA to widen the scope of their investigation because we had information to provide and we had about other areas that needed to be investigated. And unfortunately, our request fell on deaf ears.
Okay. Amanda, thank you so much for your time. Amanda Coughlin there. Just as we approach the news at 10 o'clock, a caller says, I totally agree with you on horse racing, etc. I've never agreed with this exploitation of innocent animals for profit. It's not natural and is a form of cruelty. And my situation is different in that my views have changed in recent years and haven't been influenced by, you know, any individual or Twitter account or anything. It's just, you know, watching on. We spoke to John, do you recall? He was homeless in Inishowen. He'd been in receipt of homeless vouchers. He was told that the vouchers were no longer going to be issued to him. And I believe from the conversation, he was offered sort of sheltered accommodation in Bundoran. And he said his roots were in Inishowen now. His counselling was in Inishowen now. And it was not a good fit for him. The council have responded and they say, following a number of recent inquiries, Donegal County Council would like to confirm its continued commitment to supporting individuals and families experiencing homelessness across the county. Recent enhancements to the emergency accommodation service model are part of a broader effort to improve the quality, oversight and effectiveness of homeless supports in line with the Homeless Action Plan for the Northwest region. So, I think that is effectively saying, and I shouldn't presume that it's seen as to long-term homelessness, especially if people need other supports, that there are sort of units of accommodation for them, but they're not going to be in every location.